Gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is producer Scott. Scott, what's up, man? How you been? What's going on with you?
Not much, you know, trying to fill in for our good friend Mike while he's getting some sleep, hopefully. Hopefully his baby's getting some sleep, but we're back to some little off-season news.
Yeah, from what we can gather, it seems like baby McDaniel is still working on that whole, you know, when it gets dark, you close your eyes, close your mouth, and, you know, do that for long stretches of time. Yeah, so Mike is also working on that, I think, as we speak. So Scott filling in, doing the Lord's work, going to keep us updated here with all sorts of ACC news. Tried to make sure that we got a recording in here with within, you know, a couple of weeks of the last one, and instead of waiting, you know, like a month and a half or whatever, whatever our previous interval was. So, Scott, thank you for joining. Appreciate this. Thank you all for listening, by the way. If you're still listening to this in the offseason, we really appreciate you guys. You are our real true listeners, I think, at this point. You probably already know this, but you can go follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/@theaccfootballpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, on Instagram. Thank you. All sorts of places. So just dropping that in, trying to be on good behavior since I know producer Scott is watching, and trying to make sure that we do all the right things as a podcast. Is that right, Scott?
Yep. Go watch YouTube, Apple, Amazon, anywhere you get your podcast. Ask your smart device. I won't say the name so it doesn't trigger yours if you're listening at home. But ask it to play the podcast and it will play it. But further ado, we can get into some coaching news.
Yeah, we got a bunch of news here, Scott, that we just got to kind of work through here. We got a couple of contract extensions. I think one a little bit more consequential maybe than the other, or one more significant than the other. The big one here, news came out, and so we record this the evening of Thursday, February the 9th. It was yesterday on the 8th that Florida State announced that they have given Mike Norvell a significant contract extension through the 2029 season. With that agreement, he will now earn an average of just a shade over $8 million a year. Significant, I mean, obviously Florida State coming off of a really good year. Seems like it's been a pretty solid three-year build so far under Mike Norvell. And for where Florida State was, I think, when he took over, it's been pretty impressive, I think. And, you know, my thought on Florida State, I think they're going to be really good next year. But to me, Scott, I think the really telling thing is going to be the next 2 years, because number one, can you repeat what you did in 2022? Can you repeat that in 23, number one? And then number two, in 2024, can you keep it rolling when Jordan Travis finally leaves you and you got to replace the quarterback? I think those are the kind of the key questions in my mind. And so I realize that's great analysis saying, like, well, I don't know how good they can be over the next 2 years, you know, but I do think that if they're pretty solid for like the next 2 years, I think that bodes really, really well for them to really have a nice decade ahead of them at the top end of the ACC here.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think Mike Norvell's agent agrees with you, Joey. If you read more of the article on the release, his incentives start in 2024, which is next season, which include a New Year's Six bonus, a CFP bonus, and national championship bonus. So I agree with you. I think if Norvell can keep the train rolling down there in Tallahassee, he's going to have good things to come for his pocketbook, and I'm sure the player's pocketbook, if NIL, you know, obviously still rolling down there in Tallahassee. Great improvement this year. They should be better, I would think, next year than they were this year. And without the divisions, they're definitely a contender to, I would say they're the favorite to be in the ACC title game besides Clemson, and then they're probably a close favorite to win the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to be a pretty popular pick to win the conference in 2023 with the way that they played, the number of guys they got coming back on both sides of the ball. One of the things that I wonder about, and we'll talk some more about, you know, one of the things that has really been a big deal for them the last couple of years has been transfers that have come in. Yeah, Jermaine Johnson, the defensive end, came in. Jared Verse, the defensive lineman. You've got Johnny Wilson, the wide receiver. Like, a number of these guys that have transferred into Florida State have become big time, not just like they start and they play a lot of plays. Like, some of the best players on their team have transferred in. Jordan Travis transferred in from Louisville. Now, that was before Mike Norvell got there. But the point stands, you get those transfers in, those are making a big deal. It makes it look like an attractive transfer destination for other guys who are leaving their current spots. The thing I wonder about is that a sustainable model, or have you just hit blackjack, you know, three or four hands in a row at the table? That doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden the world's best blackjack player. Like, it's, I don't know. Is this a skill, like, repeatable thing, or is it a luck thing? So that'll be something to monitor as well with the way that they've constructed this roster. But it does seem like there is a really strong foundation there that might well be able to kind of return Florida State to a level of prominence that they weren't, you know, they hadn't been at in 5-6 years, really.
Yeah, I agree with you on can it keep rolling. Their recruiting class, which we're going to kind of touch on later in the podcast, just finished third for the 2023 cycle. So, or in the ACC, third in the ACC. So sorry to clarify there. But so assuming they can develop some of those guys, they should be okay. And a fun little tidbit, apparently, according to Bill Connolly of ESPN, they as in Florida State, are returning the most production of any FBS team next season. So next year, again, not worried about, like you said, the future is going to be interesting. Hopefully they'll keep it going. That's all I got on Mike Norvell and the Seminoles.
Spoiler, Clemson hiring the offensive coordinator is about the only thing kind of giving me pause a little bit from going pretty full steam into picking Florida State to win the ACC this fall. So we'll see how things go through the rest of the offseason. I reserve the right to change that pick, but when we make official picks, there is a decent shot that I am picking the Noles to win the conference this fall. We'll see. One other extension that came out, it was just a minor thing, I think, about a week ago. Mack Brown got a one-year extension at North Carolina to keep him there, in theory, through 2027. I don't know, Scott, if you really think he's going to be there that long. Like, this is an older man who, I think, in a weird way, is you know, above average to good as North Carolina has been under him the last couple years. I do get the sense that it's wearing a little bit thin with North Carolina fans feeling like, you know, they've been pretty good, but they should have been better. I wonder, between some of those things and his age, like, is he really going to coach all the way through this? This feels like it's just like a formality, like recruiting kind of extension that doesn't really mean a whole lot in terms of they're really bought in on keeping him long term.
Completely agree with you there. I have been one to throw in the basketball conference group chat that I think Mack Brown is a geriatric Jordan Brand model. So. I think he should retire. I don't think they're that good. He can recruit, I guess, but can they coach still? Eh. Drake May's a talent, so he got lucky there, and the defense was god awful, so I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. 2027, I don't see him staying there that long. Don't know who they would hire to replace him. I don't know if there's anyone in the North Carolina staff right now who would be looked at as a potential successor, or if they'd hire from outside, but not akin to, or I don't even know if that's the right word, so excuse my language, but don't know enough about the North Carolina program to know where they would be going with that. Don't know. What do you know anything about North Carolina's program on the inside?
Not extensively. I mean, looking at the coaching staff, I don't know that there's an obvious candidate to be, you know, the coach in waiting. If anything, I thought maybe Phil Longo would be. But with him gone to Wisconsin, they hired Chip Lindsey to take his place. I mean, Chip Lindsey, I think, has maybe experience. Yeah, he was at Troy for 3 years, but was pretty underwhelming. He comes off the Malzahn tree from an offensive standpoint, which I don't know how dynamic and impressive that is in this modern day of college football. It is a difference from what Longo was running, so we don't even know if that's going to work. Defensively, I mean, Gene Chizik obviously has a national title under his belt, but I think that was more of Cam Newton carried Gene Chizik to a national title than the other way around. So I don't know. If I'm North Carolina and Mack Brown comes in tomorrow and says, hey, I'm stepping down, I think, yeah, maybe you look at Gene Chizik and you say, hey, like, you know, can you be the head coach for this fall? And then I'm probably running a start from scratch kind of situation after that. I don't know that this is a thing where they're going to keep it in the house. I don't know if there's any obvious candidates. That's honestly the thing that might be worth thinking about or looking into is they just got rid of Dre Bly, their secondary coach. And the secondary had been pretty terrible for, you know, very underwhelming for the level of talent there. I mean, the guy can recruit.
All just left too.
Yeah. The guy can recruit, and that seems like a lot of what a head coach needs to do these days. So maybe that's an option. I think especially with the way that they hired Mack Brown, had some of the locals back around, it does seem like they're going to want to go for somebody that is familiar to the program. But who knows? Sometimes these programs, you know, lose one coach and then they try to hire the opposite of their ex. So maybe they try to go for someone who's been as far away from them as possible. Who knows?
Yep. I think that's well said. I don't have much else on Mack Brown and the Tar Heels. Do you want to talk about Miami?
Yeah, let's talk about Miami. Scott, strange things are amiss in South Beach or Miami Gardens or Coral Gables or wherever. Scott, first year head coach Mario Cristobal, things did not go well, as we said. I mean, I think it was no. 5-7, I believe, was the result. I think it was after we recorded last that they announced officially that they were parting ways with offensive coordinator Josh Gattis.
Correct.
We talked a little bit about that, I think, in the weeks leading up. Was basically, this is a guy who was a former Broyles Award winner, was really supposedly highly thought of, but like didn't seem like his offenses were super dynamic at Michigan. Didn't know that they were really all that dynamic either at Miami, just in this one year that he was here. Started questioning how much of that is Gattis versus how much of that is the head coaches he was working under, you know, kind of trying to get a little too involved. So Josh Gattis is out. I don't think that there has been an official announcement of a new offensive coordinator. We did see rumors that they were potentially targeting Jason Candle, who is the head coach at Toledo, would not be the first MAC coach to take an offensive coordinator role, basically leave a sitting head coaching spot to go take an offensive coordinator after Sean Lewis did that, leaving Kent State to go take the Dion's offensive coordinator role at Colorado. So targeting Jason Candle there, but going back to his time at Oregon, when's the last time that Mario Cristobal was the head coach of a team that had like an offense that felt like it was equal to or greater than the sum of its parts? It feels like it comes up a little bit short on a regular basis when Mario Cristobal's in the room.
I was going to make a joke and say Chip Kelly, but he didn't work for Mario Cristobal, so...
Right.
I don't know. Something's weird down there in the water of South Beach, Coral Gables, like you said. Don't know where they live. Mm-hmm. They also lost their quarterback's coach as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even if, you know, sometimes when an offensive coordinator leaves, they promote from within, and it's usually a quarterback's coach, passing game coordinator type of person. But that guy's out of here. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the heck they're going to do. And... Yep. I'm not trying to be skeptical. I know Miami is a very lucrative school. It can open up a lot of opportunities. I don't know if I'd leave Toledo to go coach at South Beach unless you're really over the weather in the winter in, you know, Northwest Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all I have.
Which, if you are, understandable. We get that.
Yeah. Lake effect snow ain't no joke.
Yeah. Well, and with some of the recent money that seems like it's pouring, like, not that Miami has ever felt like a poor football program, but, you know, now with some extra money even pouring in, it seems like decent shot that Miami might be able to pay their offensive coordinator more than Toledo can pay its head coach. So there could be some money, financial incentives in there as well. Yeah. I don't know. As mentioned, Frank Ponce was the quarterback's coach. He heads to Appalachian State to be their offensive coordinator. Sounds like it is a kind of a step up, a promotional thing, but there was also some speculation that he wasn't coming back either way. So yeah, changing your offensive coordinator, changing your quarterback's coach. We also found out Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator, was hired away by Nick Saban, He'll be the new DC at Alabama. And then, so they hired Lance Guidry, formerly of Marshall, most recently, but also spent a good amount of time at like McNeese State and has been around for a long time. He's hired as defensive coordinator. And then we find out, I think it was today, yesterday, Scott, that Charlie Strong
today
seems to have resigned his position.
I guess. So the quote in the article I'm reading from ESPN's Chris Lowe is that, this is from Charlie Strong, "Coach Cristobal and the program made a decision to go in a different direction. It's time for me to go in a different direction." So that sounds to me like he's resigning.
I wonder if this is a little bit of sour grapes about not getting that promotion.
I think it is. Later in the article from Chris Lowe still, it says that Charlie Strong learned of Guidry's hiring Tuesday, and he was never interviewed for the job. And so, yeah, sour grapes sounds right.
You know, and for a guy, I mean, he and Guidry have both been coaches for a long time. They've coached a lot of defense, all that. But, man, it's only recently. I don't know that Guidry actually, and I can go back and double check this. I don't know that Guidry has actually coached at the Power 5 level in the past. As I scan through this, no. This is his first Power 5 job, is defensive coordinator for Miami. Charlie Strong, on the other hand, obviously former head coach at Louisville, former head coach at Texas, former defensive coordinator at Florida, South Carolina, was, you know, coached at Notre Dame. Like, he has been around the block several times. I mean, for that guy to be on your staff and to not even get an interview, is there something there? Like, what's the deal with that? That seems like a real slap in the face, I would think, you know, and it's understandable why he would want to leave. Like, you're not even going to give me a shot at this?
Yeah, maybe just some bad blood between him and Cristobal. Don't agree on the direction of the program as well. I mean, obviously, if he is not getting an interview. Like you said, you just ran through Charlie Strong's resume. Been around the block, been around for years. I'm sure he'll catch on somewhere where he wants to be and he feels wanted. So maybe even can stay in the ACC as an assistant or a whatever they call those advisory role positions or something. But I'm not familiar with Charlie Strong's, like, where he's originally from, background. Maybe he'll try to latch onto a school, like, in his hometown or wherever his, like, family's based. Don't know. Yeah, I would even, like, just throw it out there. Maybe he ends up back at Notre Dame. I don't know. But random thoughts. That's all I have.
You and Mike wouldn't mind
for
that.
Charlie Strong. Yeah, I would like that. Yeah, because it gives Marcus Freeman more time to focus on the team and not the defense. But they got their own offense coordinator issues now with Tommy Reese leaving, so we don't need to get into Notre Dame talk.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Charlie was listed as the co-defensive coordinator and the linebackers coach at Miami. His Wikipedia page now lists him as the co-defensive coordinator and linebackers coach at Alabama starting this fall, but I think that is some Wikipedia shenanigans. I don't think that's an official report or anything that's really happening at this point. I will say that he is 62. He will be 63 by the time the season starts. And again, he's been around for a long, long time. If he wants to, like you said, Scott, if he wants to coach somewhere, if he wants to do something, there will be jobs out there for him. He is well regarded. He recruits very well. I think he's a pretty damn good defensive coach for my money as well. But you could also see where he's getting, you know, later in his career, later in life, maybe he doesn't want to, you know, really burn the candle at both ends trying to advance his career at this point. You know, as a guy who was a head coach, basically Louisville, Texas, and then remember he was also at South Florida for 3 years. Those things kind of started to tail off, didn't really end all that well for him. I don't know. Maybe he rides off into the sunset a little bit, but this would definitely be a way. I'd be a little surprised if he wanted to let things lie, having ended like they did here in Miami. I will say about Lance Guidry, you know, he came from Marshall. Marshall did have a good defense the last couple of years, so I think that's a good thing. I don't know. It's interesting that Miami, a team that, again, we're talking about them hiring, poaching a sitting head coach at a MAC school for offensive coordinator, And then for defensive coordinator, they're going and getting a guy who's never coached at the Power Five level. Like, bit of an odd pick. That's a school that almost could have their choice of a lot of candidates out there. So a bit of an odd, interesting move for Mario Cristobal. And I think with what we know about him, my question is how much of this is about coaching, defensive schematics, like, let's get this, you know, get that set up the way that we want to. How can we make guys tackle well? Some of those things versus how much of it is kind of a hotshot recruiter. He's going to get me a lot of talent. I don't know that Guidry is a particularly well-known, well-regarded recruiter. So it's more just following the Cristobal tea leaves or the Cristobal breadcrumbs on that one, maybe at times, but this seems more like a coaching scheme, actually get people in the spots they need to be in kind of higher to me.
Yeah. Refresh my memory. Is Cristobal originally a defensive coach? I forget.
He was an offensive line coach, I believe.
Okay. So my theory is out the window then, and we will disregard that. Yeah. I don't really know much about Guidry, whatever that fellow's name is. Good luck down there in South Beach.
Lance.
Do we have anything else on the Miami staff?
I don't think so. Things are still very much in flux. I've got a DM from Cam here. Hi, Cam.
Hey, Cam.
Offensive coordinator, QB coach, wide receivers coach, linebacker coach, all currently open. And others may flip as well. And that is
okay.
a GIF of the pig from the Geico commercial hanging out the car window saying, "Wee!"
I was going to wonder if it was the dog in the burning bar. This is fine.
Yeah.
But, okay, well, it sounds like Miami and Mario Cristobal got some more work to do down there on the coaching staff, so by the next time we roll one of these out there, maybe we'll have some more hires to announce. But, Joey, speaking of a hire, do you want to give your final grade on Brent Key?
Oh, I did promise this, didn't I?
You did.
So, yeah, a little bit of dust has settled. We've seen a couple things, you know, where people have landed, both recruits, other coaches, those kinds of things. We've seen how he filled out his staff and some of the off-field hires. I think in general, and this is I don't know, it feels like a little bit of a cop-out, almost like my incomplete goal or my incomplete grade was when I did the solo show on this back in, what, early December, late November, whenever that was. I'm going to give this like a C. It just feels very, I'll call it whelming. I think they could have done better. I think they could have done a lot worse. It does seem like the situation just sort of kind of led to this type of thing. So the one that people are going to kind of hang their hats on is, well, you know, you had the thing with Willie Fritz. Why can't you, you know, why couldn't you make that work? Or what does it say when he turns you down? I almost think of that as like, sometimes it feels like schools and candidates just have different goals or you know, kind of have different requirements. And so for this one in particular, it sounds like timeline was a significant requirement where Georgia Tech was saying, we need to get somebody in the door now to try to keep the roster together, avoid a bunch of transfers, get prepped for signing day, which is coming up in like a week and a half, like all that stuff. And Willie Fritz was saying, well, my team is playing in a conference championship game for the first time in how many decades or whatever it is for Tulane. Like, we're doing that on Saturday. I want to, you know, coach with these guys and be with the team through that. It's like sometimes, you know, Georgia Tech and Willie Fritz just had different requirements schedule-wise. And you, it sucks in a way to make a decision that's going to affect you over the next 3, 4, 5 years based on what can we do this week. But with the way that the college football calendar is set up, I mean, who knows how much more you might have lost if you brought in Willie Fritz, but you couldn't really announce him until the following week, and guys are already hitting the transfer portal, and you know, you've got committed guys that are leaving. So I'm okay with the Brent Key hire. I think some of the staff hires that he's made, he hired Buster Faulkner, Georgia's like quarterback analyst, we'll say, not their quarterbacks coach, not their offensive coordinator. Technically not supposed to be coaching anybody at any time, but apparently he and Stetson Bennett had a really great game day relationship going on. So I'm sure that's all kosher and up to standard. He's reasonably well regarded, a guy who's been around and has coached in a few different spots. I think that's fine. Retained a decent amount of the defensive staff, which makes sense. honestly, as bad as that defense was under Jeff Collins, like the moment that Jeff Collins left, it seemed like things started to click a lot better, which, woof. So much can be said about that man. But I don't know. I think, if anything, I was mostly interested, intrigued at a couple of his off-field hires. He hired like two or three different in-state high school head coaches to be like recruiting staff for him in the office. I thought that was very interesting. I thought it was very a pretty sharp move, a good strategy. Got some names, got some clout that are going to help, I think, with the recruiting aspect. Georgia Tech is not a program that is just totally flush with NIL cash like a couple others that we'll talk about here in a little while when we talk about signing day and final recruiting classes and all that. But what they do have, I think they're going to try to, you know, retain current players more so than entice new players. But I think it'll be fine. I think, if nothing else, I think what we saw from Brent Key over the final eight games of the 2022 season, I think what we saw is that he's going to raise the floor. I don't think that Georgia Tech will be going worse than, call it, 5-7, unless you have just like a ton of injury health issues. And so in reality, I think if he can pretty consistently get the team going to 6-6, 7-5 at the very least, I think things will start to fall into place a little bit more than that. And that should be like a baseline expectation for the Georgia Tech program. And so I think that he'll at least get close to that. The contract was reasonably favorable to Georgia Tech. So if they want to get out of it after like two or three years, it is really not that costly to do. It should be reasonable. So all in all, yeah, I'll call it a C, maybe a C+. I don't know. It's not particularly exciting. I'm not like thrilled about it, but I think all things considered, like, could have been quite a bit worse. And there are definitely names that came up as part of that search that I was like, oh, please no. Oh, please no. Thrilled to have Brent Key instead of like Bill O'Brien or, you know, Ken Wisenhunt's name for whatever reason comes up at times. I don't know. So, yeah, I'll take it. It's fine.
Okay. C+. We'll call that a 76.5 then. That's on the edge.
That's like, you know, that'll get you through engineering school. I mean, I can attest
to
that.
C's get degrees, baby. Same. Me too. definitely can talk about that. Okay, I think that's a good grade. I was going to ask about the contract. How long was the contract? How many years?
I think it's a five-year contract. His base salary, if I'm not mistaken, and it's been a little bit since I looked at this, but I think it's like a five-year contract, and I want to say his first year or two, his base salary is like $2.8-2.9 million. Like, there's definitely like a hometown discount, you know, Brent Key's not getting hired anywhere else as a head coach kind of discount. So right. I thought that was good. And then the buyout is, I think, a little bit steep, you know, the first couple of years, but I think after year two, maybe year three, it's like it becomes much more reasonable.
Okay. I guess I had one lasting question before we can move on. Do you think he makes it the 5 years?
It's a good question. I can kind of see it going two ways, honestly.
Before you answer that, sorry, the reason I ask is, like, will his leash be longer because the contract is favorable?
Maybe a little
bit. Or less favorable, shorter. I'm sorry, I did that backwards. But, like, because it's a favorable contract to get out of, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, will they just pull the trigger faster? Sorry, that's what I meant to say.
I think they will. I think, like I said, I think 6-6, 7-5 by year two to year three is a totally reasonable expectation. And if you're not meeting that, yeah, I think they'll just absolutely pull the trigger on that, no problem.
Okay.
The thing that I think about, though, and I wonder, is there is a little bit of crossover or similarity between Georgia Tech hiring Brent Key and, like, Northwestern hiring Pat Fitzgerald. Like, there is a chance that, you know, Brent Key, a guy who's coached under George O'Leary, who's coached under Nick Saban, like, he has seen it. He's never really had a chance to be a head coach before. There is a chance that this just, like, magically really works. And I don't know that he, I mean, he's not going to take Georgia Tech to a playoff appearance or anything like wild like that, but like, could he build Georgia Tech into what, you know, call it like Pittsburgh has become at this point, like a consistent 8-9 win team? I don't think that's totally off the table, you know, so I don't know. I think that's a possibility. I think it's also entirely possible that, yeah, he's fired after 2 or 3 years and we're having like another search, but this one, you know, this one, it feels like you're shooting for some bigger candidates rather than trying to see if you can possibly money whip Coastal Carolina or something like that. So,
yeah, I guess like I'm curious, like if you get to that like 5-7, 6-6, 7-5 mark over the next 2 to 3 years, I'm going to assume, like you said, that's a success. So then like after that, how long are they going to like say, all right, 7-5, maybe 8-4, maybe 9-3. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, Georgia Tech's not, it's not in my head going to be doing great every year. They could have a pop year once or twice. Similar to like what you said about Pat Fitzgerald, I'm wondering like, okay, if they get into that like making bowl games consistently range, but maybe not like competing for the ACC title range, like at what level did the Georgia Tech donors and decision makers decide like we want more or this is fine, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, and it was that, I mean, there were a number of people for years that were calling to move on from Paul Johnson, because I think in, you know, you after the Orange Bowl year, they went 3-9 and then they went 9-4, I think. And then it was like 5-6 and I think 6-6. And I guess that ended up being 6-7. But it's like that 6-6 was definitely not good enough. And people were like, oh, we should be doing better than this. And then careful what you ask for, because Jeff Collins can just, you know, blow a giant crater in the middle of your program. So things like that can happen. I think at this point, 6-6 sounds good. It is not hard to imagine getting 2-3 years into 6-6 and thinking, well, we need to be 8-4. So I think that's one of the things, like, you know, we can say today 6-6 would be an improvement, but at some point, not very far off, 6-6 won't be good enough. So yeah, I think that is an entirely possible situation that we're talking about. Honestly, I don't know what he would have to do. It would have to, I think he would probably have to get more towards that consistent, like, 7, especially even 8 wins a year to make it through the full 5 years. I think people are going to be willing to move on. Okay. unless they show a significant improvement.
I think that's a reasonable take.
Yeah, I don't know. We will see. We've documented pretty well Georgia Tech being a unique case and having some built-in issues for this day and age of college football. So I'm curious to see what he can come up with. I don't know. I'm curious, and you know, I do like him. I things I see and I hear from him. I mean, it's just, there's something about having what feels like an adult in the room as opposed to having like a, you know, a toddler with a Twitter account running around trying to coach your team. So that feels like an upgrade at the very least.
It's about how the Brooklyn Nets locker room is feeling right now. All right, you want to talk about Section 103?
I do, yeah, Scott. It's the internet's premier place for all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. It has all sorts of great t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies. They've got V-necks, things for men, women, children, the whole family. They've got even like this like sleeveless hoodie thing that kind of matches what Brent Key was running up and down the sideline doing. Go check it out. They've got a couple of new things in their collection too, just recently updated. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order at section103.com. I love their performance shirts. I think they're incredibly comfortable. And then I got one of the new gray hoodies, the coach hoodie that came in, I think it was back around Thanksgiving. Man, I have been wearing the heck out of that thing recently. And you know it's good when it gets deboed by my wife, who just hasn't, absolutely cannot resist a soft gray piece of clothing, and that is definitively what that is. So go check them out, section103.com. once again, use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order for all sorts of wonderful apparel for the entire family. Things with the official Tech gold, all the official word marks, the ATL logo, everything, it is all there. Things for football season as well as, you know, basketball season, baseball season coming up. Go check it all out and use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order at section103.com. Appreciate Steven and the gang for their partnership as always. Scott, let's talk. Okay. We mentioned the recruiting thing. Let's get into some. We just had National Signing Day, so let's kind of take inventory of the ACC as it as we kind of wrap up signing day. And we talked about this, I don't know, probably a month ago or something, in terms of kind of some just generalized, you know, like where things stood. And we hit on a few different programs, but we can go quickly run down the conference from top to bottom, where things stand and where everyone finished, and just kind of give a couple of brief thoughts. Let's start at the top, finishing first, and this is all by the 24/7 sports composite ranking, which combines them as well as, I believe, Rivals, Scout, maybe ESPN, a couple of those. So we will start at the top of the ACC, where the Miami Hurricanes finished 7th overall and 1st in the conference. 2 5-stars, 15 4-stars. They finish, I think, a nice little margin between them and Clemson. A good recruiting class from Mario Cristobal. That is not a surprise. That is really what you hire him to do as much as anything. But Scott, as we've said, when's the last time Miami wasn't winning football games because it was a talent issue?
Show me on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And right now they can't because they don't have an offensive staff.
Mm-hmm. If you hear media going back and forth about, well, now Miami's really recruiting and now they're going to really take over the ACC, like, just understand, the national media wants Miami to be good so badly. They want that so bad. They want to bring back, you know, the state of the U and, like, all that stuff from, like, the late 80s, everything. I mean, again, it has never been a talent issue with Miami. And you could say, like, they're not necessarily the most talented team in the ACC. Clemson probably takes that crown still at this point. But at the end of the day, they are more talented than almost every team they play. And yet, they continue to go 7-5, maybe 8-4 every year. Or 5-7 last year.
And lose at home to, what was that, Middle Tennessee State or something?
Give up 45 points to Middle Tennessee at home. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Show me on the field, Miami.
That's
next.
That's correct. Number 2 in the ACC, number 11 overall, the Clemson Tigers. This is, I mean, it's good. 1 5-star, 18 4-stars. It is a really solid and deep class. It seems like it lacks a little bit at the top end, but there is a lot of depth there. And again, Clemson going to retain their spot as, you know, most talented team, I think, top to bottom in the ACC. Just, again, I think their issues and what kind of them being able to get back to the heights that they achieved prior. I don't totally know if this will do this. I don't know if it won't, but yeah, I don't know. Good for Clemson. Back at the top of the ACC where they always have been.
Yep. Not much to add on my part. They still lack in the transfer portal down there in Clemson, South Carolina.
They sure are. That is what's the word I'm looking for here? They conscientiously object to the transfer portal. And that really All right. goes both ways in a lot of ways, honestly. They don't take him, but they don't lose him either.
Culture.
It looks like they did take Paul Tyson from Arizona State as a quarterback, but
that's a real kicker name. I thought he was going to be a kicker to replace Potter, but okay, Paul Tyson. All right, Dabo, keep doing your thing.
I think he was related to Bear Bryant, which, again, Dabo played at Bama, so there's a connection there.
If so, facto, so, come to Clemson.
Also, right. One of my favorite names in this class, Vic Burley. Go get
that. Sounds like a linebacker.
Defensive lineman.
That's a You're linebacker good. Name. Oh, close enough. All right.
Number 3 in the ACC, the Florida State Seminoles. They come in at 19th nationally, 1 5-star, 8 4-stars. This is where you get in the discussion again of, like, including transfers in these rankings, because Florida State only had 18 players committed here. And without that did not include that they brought in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 transfers, almost all of them from what looks like Power Five programs. So it's like looking at this just purely at guys coming in from high school does not give the full picture. And so when you hear these recruiting rankings, you do have to take them with a little bit of a grain of salt because it doesn't really give you the full picture of what these teams are adding or losing in a lot of ways as well from their roster a year ago.
Yep. Now that I'm playing with the tool on 24/7, I realize you can select overall, which includes that transfer statistics. So maybe we should be looking at it that way. But otherwise, 27 total commits. You get those Power 5 transfers. That's been, like you already talked about, Norvell's bread and butter so far down in Tallahassee. See if they can keep it going. Good classes like this, though, if they can develop the talent and transfer in the talent when they need to, they're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number 4 in the ACC and number 28 nationally, North Carolina. The ACC only has 4 teams in the top 30 nationally. That's not a great sign, but again, a little bit of, you know, there might be some context there that we can include, but North Carolina, this is not as high end of a class as we had seen in previous years under Mac Brown. I wonder if that's, you know, a little bit related maybe to that contract extension, or there's something going on with high school recruits. They're not getting the high end level guys right now that they had gotten earlier in his tenure.
Maybe kind of results driven. I mean, they just saw Dre Bly, who was reportedly an amazing recruiter, leave the program. All of the defensive backs that Dre Bly brought in transferred out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking maybe it's trickling down. Also, you have influence from, I don't mean to, you know, put my own team out there, but Virginia Tech's Brent Pry has been focusing on recruiting more than his previous man at the helm there down there in Blacksburg, Justin Fuente. So I don't know if that has an impact at all. And then there's the NIL factor. People are just getting paid more to go other places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, number 5 in the ACC, Louisville, number 35 nationally, only 15 commits, but they're high end guys. Scott, it turns out Louisville's starting to develop a pipeline out in the state of California. Louisville with 15 commits, 4 of them from the state of California, all of them 4 stars, I do believe. Pierce Clarkson, quarterback out of St. John Bosco. Aaron Williams, defensive back, also out of St. John Bosco, 4 star. Jamari Johnson, Inglewood, California, 4 star. And then Jaleel McClain, a high 3 star out of also St. John Bosco. Scott, what is it do you think about kids that grew up in Southern California and are playing their football out in Southern California that now they are being enticed to come to Louisville, Kentucky to play their college football?
My man Pappy Van Winkle is putting some NIL money together. And
be that bourbon
getting
craze.
Those recruits and kind of get that recruits out to the state of Kentucky. Or our man Papa John, formerly stadium sponsor, is paying for pizza sponsorships.
Dropping some bags.
Sounds like NIL to me. Last I checked, the Hyperloop did not go and won't be going from Louisville, Kentucky to Southern California. Sorry, Elon. So I don't know.
I haven't checked recently, but I'll take your word for that.
Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what Papa John is doing now with his money, now that he's kind of been disgraced and he's not really allowed to be officially associated with the school, is just, you know, go get guys. I don't know. Yeah, very clear that Louisville has a very alive and well NIL program, I think. Reuben Owens was the running back out of, like, Victoria, Texas, like the middle of nowhere, that all of a sudden he decided he wanted to go to Louisville. And by the way, all these guys were committed well before they made a coaching change. And it was Owens who flipped to Texas A&M, I think, around the time of the coaching change. That made some sense. But everyone else seems to have stuck with Louisville and doesn't seem to be worried about a coaching change, which, once again, could be anything. Probably, you know, we'll call it NIL. I am so tired of calling it that. Can we just call it what it is? It's like pay-for-play. Come on. Like, let's grow up and be adults here. It's pay-for-play. It's fine. Just call it what it is.
It's money. Moving on.
Number 6.
My Virginia Tech Hokies.
Your Hokies, yep. Scott. How we feel about the recruiting class?
They're overhauling the whole roster. The roster was bad.
Needed.
They got 34 commits total between transfers and high school students. I think that's the most in the conference. Quick glance, looks like it's the most.
A lot of turnover.
They're overhauling the whole thing. They asked veterans to leave, basically. They were like, you don't have a spot here anymore. People that had eligibility left. They're transferring some in-conference, some out-of-conference. So Brent Pry's trying. I like to see him trying. I'm hoping to see results this year. And that's all I got.
Yep. Yeah, as we talked about, I remain high on the Brent Pry hire. Brent Key, Brent Pry. Got to keep my Brents straight here. I remain high on the Brent Pry hire, but I always felt like this is going to take a couple of years because I felt like the damage that Justin Fuente and his staff did to that roster is not something, even with the transfer portal, I just don't think that's something you could fix overnight.
You can't, and you saw it last year. It's not good. The depth doesn't exist. So yep. He's doing his darndest. He's trying to recruit the heck out of the state of Virginia, which Fuente neglected to do. Hopefully that turns around for the Hokies that listen to this podcast, and we have some good pipelines in state, and then hopefully some results to show for it come in the fall, yep. And later.
And as you mentioned, 27 commitments that led the conference. That's just purely from the numbers game. It doesn't really mean anything one way or the other. It just kind of helps the numbers. Number seven, the midpoint, the NC State Wolfpack. They are the bar in recruiting. And if you're a real OG of this podcast, you know the joke there. But I don't know. It's fine. 3 4-stars, 15 3-stars. Again, this is one of those where it seems like it kind of lacks for high-end talent a little bit. But NC State, also a program that seems like they are more than capable of finding some diamonds in the rough, some gems that are able to come in and make an impact. They brought in 6 transfers as well, including Dakari Collins from Clemson and Brennan Armstrong from Virginia.
And that's the big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that QB situation is going to be fun to watch. Number 8, the Pitt Panthers. Sorry, go ahead.
I just said it will. Go on.
Ah, fair enough. Number 8, the Pitt Panthers. 19 commitments, 1 4-star, 18 3-stars. Once again, a program that I don't know how consistently they're going to be bringing in guys that are like ultra well-regarded recruits, but they always seem to turn into like NFL caliber defensive linemen. So what do I or any of the scouts out there really know about what Pitt is doing? They are 51st nationally. And man, I got to tell you, like, it is a little bit discouraging seeing the 8th team in the ACC not in the top 50. And being out-recruited by Oregon State, Northwestern, like Arizona. You can go down the list of some of these schools that are ahead of Pitt at 8 in the ACC, and it's like, man, I worry about this conference a little bit sometimes.
I do too. Also, Phil Jerkovich transfer. So, mm-hmm. In-conference transfer. So, we'll see.
That's a big deal.
But yeah, Pitt's fine. I mean, 8, I would expect it to be a little bit higher, but you know, who really wants to go play for Narduzzi? He seems kind of meh. The next few teams, though, I have a question / maybe a take for when we mm-hmm. get through them, and it has to do with academics. So go on.
You want to hit like 3 in a row here? Or 4?
Sure. 9.
I don't know how many you had.
Sure. Now. Sure. 9, 10, 11, 12. In this order, Georgia Tech, Duke, Boston College, Virginia. Do academics play a huge role here in having these teams lower, or they're bad, except for Duke, who had a great year?
Yeah, I think that's the one caveat, is that Duke was actually like legit good. But I mean, you look at the schools at the highest end of the ACC, and you look at the schools kind of on the bottom end of the ACC recruiting wise, and you start trying to think through which ones are the most academically rigorous versus which ones are the most maybe academically forgiving. And I don't think you're shocked to find out there's a little bit of a pattern there. I will say that. Now, there's also a lot of other context at play here, as mentioned. I mean, Georgia Tech, for the things that make it tough to recruit there, it is in like in the middle of Atlanta and in the state of Georgia, which is like a super deep state recruiting-wise. There's a very different number of transfers here for each of these schools. I mean, Duke bringing in 33 total new players. So, I don't know. I think you're probably onto something. There's probably something to that, especially. You know, and one of the things we're finding out, too, especially with the level of impact that the transfer portal is having, is these different schools, there's not a lot of rhyme or reason, it seems like, as to which schools are more willing to take transfers versus not. Like, that was a big storyline when Deion took the Colorado job, was that Colorado did not want to take transfers, like, almost at all. Colorado, like, big state school in the middle of the country, didn't want to take a bunch of transfers. So it's like the school's willingness to take transfers can really shrink your pool of talent that you're able to actually target and get into school and put on your roster. So that's something else that has to be considered that I don't know that we have a lot of great data on for a lot of these schools, but I can, as I've said before, I can tell you Georgia Tech, it is not easy to transfer in there, especially for, you know, football players who it's one thing if you're studying engineering somewhere else, then, you know, it's doable, but a lot of these guys are studying things at other schools that just do not translate to like any of the few programs at Georgia Tech. So it makes your transfer pool a lot smaller than it could be. And I think that could be the case at a number of other institutions as well.
Yep. That makes sense. Every time you've given that take, it totally adds up. For Duke, I think obviously small private school, haven't been historically good, but I think, you know, obviously with the good year this year, if they can put together another one, I think that will turn around. Mm-hmm. Boston College, yikers. UVA, yikers. Wake Forest, though, is 13th, and the Claw.
The Claw. There we go.
Has been successful at developing the talent. So I guess I can't knock it, but like it seems really low for Wake Forest. And then there's Syracuse, a solid DFL. And if you don't know what DFL stands for, that's dead effing last.
Oh, that's different than D4L, who did what, Shake That Laffy Taffy back in the mid-2000s?
Yes, different.
Okay. All right, good.
I don't know how Dino keeps this up.
There is definitely a numbers game here as well. Pitt in the middle of the conference took 23. Wake took 23. Syracuse took 22. Those are the three lowest totals basically in the ACC. So that's a little bit of a part of it. But then you look at the actual score, you know, when you rate the actual quality of the 22 that Syracuse brought in, there is a gap between the 23 that Wake brought in and the 22 that Syracuse brought in. And it's not good. I'm with you, Scott. I don't know. As much as they made a bowl game and things seemed like they were looking up last year, I think this might be – we might be staring down the end of the Dino Babers era for the Orange.
Just like they were staring down those passes to the wing in the bowl game.
Everyone could see that, including the defense of Minnesota. Yeah, that was
including good. The recruits that they don't have.
Yeah.
Best of luck in upstate New York.
I wonder how I could put this. Yeah, the distance between Syracuse at 14 and Wake Forest at 13 scoring wise, by the way, is like roughly the same as the distance between Wake Forest at 13 and Pitt at 8. Like, there is a serious drop-off in quality there for the class that Syracuse brought in versus everyone else. And that does include a couple of transfers, so there is that as well. I don't know. Not surprised to see them towards the bottom. I think that the team that I'm honestly more concerned about seeing towards the bottom is Virginia at 12. That is not good. That is a program that, again, we've talked about with kind of where they're at roster-wise, and obviously, as always, there's the caveat of I know the way that their season ended. It's horrible. It's tragic. We haven't forgot about that. I'm not dismissing that at all. There's nothing that Tony Elliott will do more important this offseason than help guide his team through that and that grieving process and everything like that. But if I look at the next 2-3 years and, you know, are they going to win football games or not? I look at this and I see them 12th in the ACC after a struggling year last year. I kind of thought the idea was that Tony Elliott and some of the guys he brought in were supposed to be, you know, pretty sharp recruiters. And man, I'm just not seeing it.
I've got some rival bias, obviously, as a Hokie alum and fan, but I am concerned. One, because like they were, wasn't Bronco better than this?
Mm-hmm. Totally was.
And two, this was not like, this was a whole year of recruiting. Like he was hired last year.
This, so, in theory, I mean, for someone who is around for 5 or 6 years at a program and then he's either fired or moved on, chances are your first full recruiting class is like your best or like your second best, right? Like this should be the one where it's like you're really driving off of your hype and, well, we got to turn this thing around. We need playmakers like you, you know, the whole thing. If this is about the best you can do, this absolutely is not going to work in Charlottesville. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, and to speak on the quality kind of you were talking about between Syracuse and Wake Forest, if Wake Forest is technically one rank below Virginia at 13 as opposed to UVA at 12, but they only are separated by less than a point in the total composite, and Wake Forest has 3 less players committed. So
right.
I think that kind of states again to that quality of player.
Sure does. It sure does. So there's your ACC recruiting rankings. And as Scott mentioned, we found the overall rankings on 24/7 that does factor in transfers, although that does seem like as much as it is still kind of a new system, it's recruiting rankings are inherently imperfect anyways, but the transfer rankings seem even more imperfect. So take all this with a grain of salt. I don't know. Maybe Syracuse or Virginia will win the ACC next year. It's possible. It could happen. But, you know.
No.
Well, if they were going to win the ACC, there's a certain set of games that they would have to win. And those were defined by the schedule release that came out. Do you like that transition? How do you feel about that?
Nice.
The ACC announced the schedule for the 2023 season here in the last week or so. A couple weeks, I guess. It was January 30th. Yeah, cool. All right. Time flies when you're having fun, Scott. The ACC announced the 2023 schedule. We got that release. I don't know that there's a ton of analysis. I mean, we could point out a couple of key games. I was going to say, I mean, my big takeaway from this is I honestly don't understand the hype around this schedule release. And it's the same thing as the NFL schedule release. When the ACC announced back in June of 2022 that they were going to be abandoning the division structure and moving to just like a 3 permanent rival, 5 rotating opponent kind of situation, they announced in doing so who the permanent rivals were and the rotation schedule of who was going to play who every year. So at that point, and by the way, the rotating games, they also announced the home and away for the next 3-4 years, I believe. So at this point, we knew who you're going to play. We know where you're going to play them. So all they were announcing is when you're going to play them, the sequencing. And you found out a couple of Thursday night games, or I guess Georgia Tech Louisville opening weekend got moved to Friday night, like a couple things like that. But like, I don't know, people made a big deal about this the same way they do with the NFL, where that's a very like a regimented, structured scheduling model. I don't get the whole schedule release hype. It seems like a lot about nothing to me personally.
Yeah, I agree with you. Don't get the hype. Don't get the production, TV, whatever that was. There was a lot of complaints online, a lot of complaints from myself that it was boring, and just let's get to the point. Mm-hmm. But the schedule's here. We know when we're playing different teams. I think you hit on a lot of good points. I don't really know why there's such good hype. I think there's one cool little thing on opening weekend of Labor Day. There is an ACC matchup each day from Thursday through Monday, I
Five
believe.
straight days.
So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Go ACC to that.
Hell yeah.
There was one kind of note I wanted to put out there, and we're kind of, you know, rolling off the UVA lack of recruiting ranking. I don't know if they're going to be favored until October. So if you look at their schedule, they start with Tennessee.
Oh,
that's a big
right.
no. They're playing JMU. They're better than them right now. They're playing Maryland. They're not going to be favored at Maryland.
Yeah.
NC State, nope. Boston College, maybe, but it's at Boston College. And then they get William & Mary. So
you may well be right. They might, yeah, it might be their sixth game before they're favored. Wow.
Right. So it's going to be tough sledding for the Cavs. And then I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I'll just talk about what I think my favorite week of the season is going to be. Just looking at it now, and it's on paper. It's a light week with a couple bye weeks, but week eight, Saturday, October 21st, we've got Boston College and Georgia Tech. Clemson travels to Miami. Duke travels to Tallahassee. UVA travels to UNC. And Pitt travels to Wake. Now, some of those aren't super flashy matchups, but I think historically in the old structure with Coastal and Atlantic that you get some good cross matchups that you might have not seen all the time. And then you also get some teams that were good last year. I'm talking specifically about Duke, Florida State, that I'm excited to see this year.
I'm looking at this. I don't think any of these games that weekend are games that we would have seen on an annual basis in previous years. I think every single one of those is a new matchup, you know, that would have, it would have had to have like lined up the cross division rivalries, like your, the other division game. Like you would have had to have lined that up perfectly. Otherwise, none of these are like annual games you would have seen. So that's a pretty cool little Easter egg for that week.
Yeah. Besides UVA and UNC, they're both.
Yes.
The
okay. Yeah.
But
that's
yes,
true. That's true. Fair enough. Yeah. That
otherwise
that
you're
really
correct.
Week. What's that?
Otherwise you're correct.
Yeah. I do like this about ACC scheduling is you get kind of into that back half of the season. And I feel like the league does a pretty good job of reserving those weeks other than the week prior to Thanksgiving, the final week of the year, they do pretty well at reserving those for conference play where we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about all 14 teams playing, and it's going to be seven games because they're all just playing each other. Maybe there's a Notre Dame game in there somewhere. But for the most part, those are pretty dense ACC on ACC competition that are pretty good. I'm definitely excited for week one. As you said, we've got Thursday night Wake taking on Elon. Friday night is Miami versus Miami. And if you're asking, wait, which Miami? Well, there's only two. They're playing each other, and it's in the one they're playing in Florida. So take that for what it is. Louisville at Georgia Tech in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium there in Atlanta. That'll be Friday night. Saturday, Boston College and North Carolina and NC State, Pitt, Syracuse, Virginia, and Virginia Tech all in action as your Hokies try to get revenge on the Old Dominion Monarchs, Scott.
Again.
Just figured I'll bring that up. Sunday, Florida State takes on LSU, and then Monday will be Clemson and Duke. So yeah, five straight days of ACC games. That'll be a great opening weekend. Notre Dame week two taking on NC State, week five taking on Duke. They play Clemson on November 4th. They play Pitt on the 28th of October, and then they will play Wake Forest November the 18th. And if you think that I had this written down and I am just like reading it off, you are incorrect. I am trying to find that logo on the logo schedule. So those are the five games that Notre Dame will be playing against the ACC this year. That'll be fun. A couple other primetime games, I guess. Louisville will play Murray State on a Thursday night. Miami plays Bethune-Cookman on a Thursday night. I don't really know why, but sure, for either of those, honestly. Virginia and NC State will play on a Friday night late in September, and then Louisville and NC State will also play on a Friday night the week later at the very end of September, on the 30th of September. Syracuse has back-to-back weeknight games in on Thursday nights against Virginia Tech and then Boston College. So those games, well, I guess Thursday against Virginia Tech, Friday against Boston College. Virginia and Louisville will play on a Thursday night, November the 9th. Pitt plays Boston College on a Thursday night, the November the 16th. And then Friday, Black Friday, will be Miami and Boston College. So that'll be a fun Thanksgiving weekend game as well.
Looks like we got a consistent, except for a couple weeks in there where there's a bye week, every week looks like they've got a Thursday or Friday night matchup. That's kind of cool.
Bring back weeknight football, please, as much as possible. I love it. I miss the consistent Thursday night ACC games that we would see for the longest time. Please, at least give me that. If you can't give me Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech every year, at least give me the weeknight games.
That's still a sin.
I know.
I'm sad they got rid of that.
I'm really not happy about it. I will say one of the clear winners, I felt like, of this new scheduling model really seems to be Louisville. I think, you know, with the new head coach, Jeff Brohm, and with the way that their recruiting seems to be up, you know, hitting a real uptick with, you know, their NIL support, their pay-for-play support, all that, to then also get into a place where you're not having to play Florida State or Clemson annually, I think this sets up really well for Louisville to have shots at ACC championship game appearances at least every other year, because next year they will play both teams, both Clemson and Florida State. But I think this sets up very nicely for Louisville potentially being able to sneak their way into Charlotte there in early December.
Yeah, and it's also great for the players. They get to play different schools that they weren't, you know, playing all the time and get to go to different places. So that's cool as, you know, college experience. Also great for the fans like us. I mean, like, it's cool seeing your team play other teams and not the same boring six coastal teams every year. Like, we as in Virginia Tech are playing Florida State this year. Now, I have seen them play them once before, but like, that's it. And then they're going to play Louisville also, which they played before, but like, it's different. They're going to Louisville, and you know, it's going to be good. And NC State consistently, it's going to be good overall.
Yep, I agree. I mean, there's a couple of little aspects, again, like Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech not playing every year, that bothers me. There's a couple other little nuances probably that I don't love about this, but by and large, I really like this scheduling model. It is silly how long it was taking, you know, year over year. If you exclude the COVID year when they kind of threw the schedule out the window, added another team, and like totally rebuilt the thing. Other than that, I mean, it had been Georgia Tech is playing at Wake Forest. I don't know if that's happened since I got to college in 2009. That might have been like the last year they played there. I mean, it's been so long since Georgia Tech has traveled to Winston-Salem. And it's just bizarre for that to be the case when these teams are in the same conference. So they will be righting that wrong, playing in every stadium at minimum every 4 years, if not every other year. That feels like the right move. And I think, like you said, I mean, I think it provides a lot better matchups here.
Yep. Should be more fun. Now, if we can just fix the ACC regional networks, this will make everything better.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, it turns out Bally is, like, going bankrupt, which I think everyone is really hopeful that it means, well, they'll be out of the contract with the ACC. I'm almost positive that is not what it means. That contract will go on and on and on and on until it's over. I don't know. Thanks, John Swofford. Good job. Sigh.
Yeah, it's painful for basketball season two. I know we're basketball conference, so we can give a brief mention. I think coming up this Saturday, like, there are four games, ACC games, and two of them are on regional networks at times that the ACC network is not being used. And it's like, come on, man.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Just, yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. Scott, that's all I got. Anything else on schedules? Anything else we want to talk about?
Maybe our upcoming schedule and what we're going to try to do.
Yeah. So we've mentioned this a couple times. Our goal here is to do some team recaps. A few teams that I think had particularly interesting seasons. I think if you know us and if we know ourselves, we are absolutely kidding ourselves if we say we're going to try to recap all 14 team seasons here over the course of the offseason. We just, truthfully, frankly, we don't. Did I say frankly? Wow. Things are going great. Frankly, we don't record that much through the offseason. I don't think we're going to record 14 episodes on each individual team, but there will be some that we try to go through and deep dive kind of what happened, where things are set up to go from here. I think we've discussed before and we've talked with Cam. I don't think I'm overstepping anywhere saying that I think we're ready to have Cam on at some point soon to talk about what the hell's going on in South Florida with his hurricanes. But in any case, keep your eye out. We're going to keep recording as various news things pop up. We'll do some team recaps. Keep it tuned here. We were going to keep the content coming your way here in the off season, and hopefully we'll get a little bit of shut eye in between as hopefully Baby Weaver, Baby McDaniel, and everyone else involved is also getting said shut eye.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Going to hopefully set up similar to the preview episodes that you guys do. We're going to hopefully bring in some beat writers for those few teams that we are going to deep dive on. Maybe mm-hmm. not, but we'll see. Hopefully they would want to come on. And then going to try to keep rolling this through the spring games. Hopefully news coming out of spring games coming up. And then mm-hmm. roll into the summer schedule eventually. So, yeah.
We'll talk briefly about the NFL draft when it happens. And as you mentioned, I mean, maybe a couple of spring game occurrences that happen. As we do these team recaps, as you mentioned, I mean, there's very, very few teams that I would trust us to do those totally by ourselves. We're absolutely going to have to call in some reinforcements to help us and give us some insights there. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of content still coming your way. We're still talking ACC football all offseason as a show called Basketball Conference can be expected to do so. So, please keep it tuned here.
Yeah, please do. And since we're in the offseason, work on your golf game. Work mm-hmm. on something.
I'm trying.
Go shoot some hoops.
My golf game needs work, man.
Same.
I think that's the case for all of us. I saw a great Robin Williams stand up a couple days ago. Rest in peace, Robin. But he did it's a little a number impersonating some like Scottish guys who invented the game of golf and how just absolutely absurd it is that somebody thought this would be a fun game. It's like, yeah. Anyways, go look it up if you get a chance. I'm not going to go into it. I couldn't possibly do it justice on this medium. Scott, that's all I got. All
right. Same.
You want to work on getting out of here?
Let's get out of here and go to bed.
As mentioned earlier, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at FTRS Joey. Mike is at Mike McDaniel SI. Together, we're at BC Podcast ACC. And you can follow Scott on Twitter at Severus Snipes. Producer Scott can be found there. So go do that. You can find us on iTunes, on Google Play, on Spotify. Anywhere you go find your podcasts, go find us there. Please subscribe. Please follow, rate, review, whatever those things are that you do on those podcast
platforms. Smash the like button.
Smash that like and subscribe button. Do that on YouTube as well. We're at youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. Please find us there. Again, smash that like, smash that subscribe, hit the bell icon for more. We'll see you in the next... I've been watching too much of that. Scott, you want to tell the people where they can find us on the social medias?
Basketball Conference on Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference. Find some of the podcasts there. I mm-hmm. butchered that. At BC Podcast ACC on Twitter and Instagram. Instagram has been kind of dull lately because I've deleted the app from my phone, so sorry fam. Trying to deconnect for a little while. So that's where you can find us. You did call out my Twitter. I also deleted that app, so just, you know, beware that I might not check it for a little while. So that's all.
You killed it, Scott. Great work. You can send us emails, by the way. As mentioned, you know, we've got things we'll probably talk about, but if you want to tell us what you want us to talk about, send us an email to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. I think that's it. And that's all. Scott, did I forget anything?
Nope. You did it.
Sweet.
100%.
Scott, you're the man. Thank you for filling in tonight and tagging in for Mike. And we'll have to do this again soon. Hopefully we can get the whole band back together at some point soon and talk more ACC football. How's that sound?
Sounds good. Yep, hope we can get Mike and Baby McDaniel to sleep so they can both join us. Well, you know, Baby McDaniel in spirit. I'll bleep that out. And
doxing
and Mike
Mike's kid. Well done.
Protecting the identity. It's not my kid. I don't know.
What are the odds that Baby McDaniel has worse ACC takes than his dad does? We should just have him on the podcast, too.
Non-zero chance.
Like father, like son. There you go. Scott, this has been fun. Appreciate your time tonight. We'll do it again soon. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. For that guy, Mr. Producer Scott, and for our co-host, Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon. Until then, go ACC.